You're listening to Talking Hoosier Baseball,
a podcast by fans
from the iubase.com website.
For anyone wanting more information on the Indiana University baseball program.
Welcome. We are recording this on Wednesday, May 28th, 2021. I am Carl James, joined by stats guru Cassidy Palmer, the creator of iubase.com, Josh Bennett, and the man who knew that this team has not and would not be swept at the BART, Chris Feeney. All right, the Hoosiers hosted a four-game set for the Hoosiers and for two others of their opponents, a pod-type scenario at Bart Kaufman Field Friday through Monday. The opening night was Nebraska at Indiana. And for Indiana had Tommy Summer on the mound heading up against Cade Povich. Povich had been a bit of a thorn in the side of the Hoosiers when they faced him in Piscataway 2 weeks before. But the Hoosiers actually did quite well, scoring four runs on eight hits against Povich in four innings of work. Tommy Summer came out really doing well, a great first inning, but the problem he had had with his fingernail, which had a blister underneath it, reared its head, and due to a series of walks and hits, Tommy Summer ended up giving up six earned runs and taking the loss on the day.
Tommy was fine all week, said he felt fine. Justin said he threw probably his best bullpen of the year prior to the game, said he felt good. I kind of saw him earlier in that inning, kind of like he walked the guy or so and kind of holding his finger and looking down at his hand, and I told Justin we need to get somebody up. So I started getting Tucker up. That's when I walked out and talked to Danny, the home plate umpire. He's a really good umpire. And walked out and said, hey, we got a guy that's had a blister issue or a split fingernail issue in the past. Can I go check on him? Walked out. Tommy said the finger was bothering him. And I said, can you go? He said, yeah, I can go. I said, are you sure you can do this? Do you feel okay? He said, it hurts, but I think I can get through this. And I said, okay, let's try one more guy. We'll kind of go batter to batter. And obviously being, I think, was the third inning at that point. And you kind of try to – you don't want to go to the pen unless you absolutely have to. And he goes 2-0 and the guy homers a 2-0 fastball. And
Braden Tucker pitched a little bit in relief. Grant Machocki ended up pitching four innings, giving up only two hits without giving up any runs and striking out six, essentially saving the rest of the bullpen for the weekend portion of play. Offensively, Grant Richardson and Morgan Colopy had a couple of hits. Jeremy Houston, batting leadoff for the first time in a long time, got three hits and two RBIs to pace the Hoosiers on the day. In fact, the Hoosiers overall out-hit the Huskers 11-9 on the day. The Huskers were just a lot more efficient in driving in runs and took home the victory. Indiana-Nebraska rematched again Saturday night after Nebraska pulled off a crazy comeback win over Ohio State in the morning game. This game had a much different feel to it, though. This was much, much more so of a pitcher's duel. For Indiana, McCabe Brown went five innings, giving up two earned runs and five hits. He struck out eight and only walked three. For the most part, a pretty solid outing for Brown. But on the other end was Chance Roach for Nebraska. In a Big Ten Pitcher of the Week performance, Roach went a complete nine innings, only gave up three hits, and one earned run, that earned run being a Grant Richardson home run with two outs in the ninth inning. Roach struck out 10 Hoosiers. And the total of three hits included two by Grant Richardson and one by Tank Espelin. So essentially, Roach left the right-handed hitters hitless for Indiana in the game.
Yeah, he did a really good job. He pitched a tremendous game and mixed his game plan there after the first couple innings and did a really good job. He was really good, and we weren't able to adjust nearly well enough, and he was outstanding.
Nebraska went on to clinch the Big Ten title in the early Sunday game with a victory over Ohio State. Then Indiana and Ohio State went at it in the Sunday evening game. That was interesting. It was the second straight game that Indiana would face a complete game. Garrett Burhan pitched 9 innings, gave up 7 hits, so not quite as efficient. But he did still only give up the 1 run, which was earned. He struck out 11 Hoosiers. Gabe Bierman had a solid outing, giving up only 3 runs in 5 innings, 5 hits. He struck out 6. Nathan Stahl had 3 scoreless innings, and Reese Sharp had a scoreless inning. Offensively, the Hoosiers were led again by Jeremy Houston. Cole Barr and Jeremy Houston each had 2 hits. Ashley and Richardson had a hit, so did Colopy. And in fact, Indiana matched Ohio State in hits 7-7, but Ohio State was again more efficient and won the game 3-1.
You know, they're good kids, and they're working hard at it, and you can kind of feel them press a little bit, and obviously trying really hard to pull their weight and to do those things to help us to win, and have shown the ability to be good offensively. I think that, you know, makes it frustrating to have come off of a month where we were good offensively, and then to struggle the way that we have.
So the hitting woes were of a concern, and unfortunately those hitting woes came back again on Monday night. The other thing though is you go into the 4-game series and you're looking at especially when your Friday starter was only able to go 2.1 innings. You would think that would be a big, exhausting period to the bullpen. And the Hoosiers had what they called a staff day of 3 bullpen pitchers, John Madunio, Ty Bothwell, and Grant Maciocchi. John Madunio went 4 innings, giving up only 1 hit. And he struck out 3. Ty Bothwell, 2 innings, striking out 1. Grant Maciocchi gave up a hit, but in 3 innings, that was all he gave up, and he struck out 3. So 2 hits from 3 bullpen arms was all they surrendered. No walks, 0 walks in the game. 7 strikeouts, just an amazing performance for the Bagel.
Yeah, they were terrific. You know, Justin called a great game, and John and the rest of those guys were outstanding. And obviously, you know, when you got Ty and Josh there in the back end, you feel really confident. You know, Josh is an adult and has really good stuff. Great competitor, gets off the mound. You know, John's on 1 day's rest and coming back, and those guys are pouring it out, you know, for their teammates. And it was really impressive to watch those guys work. They executed pitch after pitch after pitch and did a terrific job.
The Hoosiers somewhat struggled offensively, 6 hits, but 2 of those came from Drew Ashley, which was really great to see. Drew Ashley swinging the bat well again. Houston got a hit again. Richardson got a hit. Paul Tate's got a very key hit late in the game. Colin Hopkins had a hit. So, yeah, I usually don't call out the single hits, but in a week when you don't hit a whole lot, you kind of have to. So didn't hit a lot, but hit enough. And the bullpen, wow, the bullpen came through to salvage the weekend and make it a 1-3 week against some very, very solid competition. One thing that was very interesting was Indiana gave up the fewest runs of any of the 4 teams at the pod, including the Big Ten champion Nebraska, who had 4. Indiana only gave up 14 runs. Nebraska gave up 15 runs. Ohio State gave up 23. And the bulk of those runs were to Nebraska. So it was, you know, for the most part, a solid defensive, very solid pitching effort, incredibly solid bullpen effort. And that'll lead right into my Hoosier highlight, which is the 2 games of performance by Grant Maciocchi. You know, Grant Maciocchi started this year as a position player. And then what do you know? They we'd heard that he could be a bullpen force, but we hadn't seen him. And then, you know, just in this last month, he's gotten a lot of innings now, but did 4 innings of scoreless ball on Friday. And that was huge in being able to save the arms for the weekend, and then came right back on Sunday. And this was after he had pitched on Tuesday and had 3 scoreless innings. And just and not just that, but it was, you can see it up there when he's up on the mound. He is in charge. He knows what he's doing. He's pitching well, got a good head on his shoulders. A veteran presence for the team out there on the mound, and earning his first save with the Hoosiers. So that is what I've got for my Hoosier highlight. And now I will pass it on to Cass. Cass, what do you have?
Thanks, Carl. Mine is very related to that. And it just, the pitching performance on Monday, that was just off the charts. I mean, looking at my scorecard, there was exactly 1 plate appearance with a runner in scoring position. That's how little they let anybody get on the bases. And that 1 in scoring position got picked off by Colin. This was one of those times I was grateful that I've discovered erasable highlighters, because that let me erase that marker for the next at bat. But just to give up only 2 hits across 3 different pitchers and just straight dominance, there was no point where it was like, where it was particularly tense, where it was like, oh, they could score, they're gonna score. It was just it was legitimately nuts. And looking at my numbers, let's see, can I do math? 11, 20. The pitchers threw only about 30 balls on the entire game. It was so strike heavy. And yeah, so I'm going to go with my Hoosier highlight is just that pitching on Monday. It was nuts. And Josh, how about you? What was your Hoosier highlight?
Thanks, Cass. So we learned Friday that Jeremy Houston was bumped up to the leadoff spot, as Carl mentioned in his recap. And to be honest, I couldn't say that I was all that surprised with it. It seems like he's been really seeing the ball well over the last couple of weeks and putting together some really quality at-bats. Well, Jeremy immediately made coach's decision look really good by getting a hit in each of his first 3 at-bats. He went on to bat 400 for the weekend with 6 hits, and also added 2 walks to go along with some solid defense and 2 outstanding plays made in the field. Jeremy's had a really roller coaster season, from highs to lows, just about as far as you can go. And I was just very happy for him. He was able to have the weekend that he did and his final games at the BART. Also, on that same kind of vein, I'd like to give a shout out to Connor Maness. He's been dealing with issues all season, and it's always tough, but even more of a downer when it comes in your senior season. So it was great to see him back out there and looking like his old self. He pitched 2 no-hit innings while striking out 4 against Nebraska on Saturday. So those are my 2 Hoosier highlights, a little sentimental maybe. But so, Chris, what are your Hoosier highlights from high school and the pros?
Thanks, Josh. First off, we want to give a shout-out to TJ White of the Dorman Cavaliers. He's part of that vaunted 2021 class. He was named to the North-South All-Star team. His team is also battling for the upper state championships. He hit his 8th home run in the clinching game to move on to the title. TJ's a big piece, okay? He's one of the top 3, I would say, that we really, you know, makes the class what it is, with it's Hayden, Montgomery, and then there's White. TJ was the first big name, big national name to sign for Coach Mercer and his staff. And it's great to see him succeeding and his team succeeding, you know, bigger games, bigger pressure, more experience. And it's definitely a good thing. And he even put some pictures on his Twitter, him at the prom, which I suggest you go check out, which are pretty wild. So congrats, TJ, on a great season and good luck going on in the All-Star game. And you know, I'm sure you'll be at some pro previews, and hopefully we will see you at the BART. So speaking of some guys we've seen at the BART, and I know this weekend was lacking some offense and, you know, some 2 guys who are doing pretty well offensively in the minor leagues, both in double A. I wanted to Mark Luke Miller for the reading fight and fills is up to 5 bombs already. He's hitting power to all fields from what I've been reading. You know, not just pull happy, nothing like that. He's really spreading it out. He's crushing the ball. He's hitting 254, and he's got 3 doubles and a triple. I feel like Luke, I don't know, when he got drafted, and then for whatever reason, he didn't play that much maybe, and then COVID. Now he's got a big power bat, and, you know, he moves through the system pretty quick. I might be seeing him against the Mets before we know it. So that I wanted to definitely put out there for Luke. And another bat, a young man who's been away from us a while now, but he's still working on his craft, still chasing his dream, Craig Dietilo. Okay, he's up to 5 home runs also for the Birmingham Barons, the White Sox organization. He's hitting 322 with 6 doubles and 2 triples. So Craig's really lighting it up. Before you know it, I could see him being up in Triple A. All right, Luke's new to Double A. Craig is not. I would think Craig could get the call up pretty soon. It would definitely be exciting to see that. I know he gave us plenty of Hoosier highlights. Whether it was raining or not, Craig, we appreciate your bat and your glove. Definitely could have used these 2 big bats over the weekend or in the past 6 games or however you want to do it. Just wanted to put out some Hoosiers in the pros offense. As always, check out at Pro Hoosiers on Twitter. He gives you your updates daily, pretty much. There's a lot of minor league stuff going out there. We got arms in the minors too. Whether it's Paulie Milto, you know, he's been throwing. A lot of times you'll see Timmy Herron's name come up. We got a Scotty Efros. He actually went down to the Arizona Instructional League to be retaught, rebranded as a side on 3-quarter guy, and he recently had a pretty big outing. He's with the Cubs organization, so. Keep an eye out for that at Pro Ball Hoosiers on Twitter. And speaking of stats, we're going to kick it over to Cass for some more.
Thanks, Chris. And I am still catching up from the 4-game weekend. Those ones are always a little rough, particularly when it goes to Monday. Once I start getting games during the week, it takes me a little bit to get caught up. And it didn't help that I fell down a pair of rabbit holes during the weekend and early this week. And so that's what I'm going to look at for my stats this week. And now it's 2 rabbit holes, one of them good, one of them not so good. And I'll start off with the not so good. After that second straight complete game by opposing pitchers, thinking back, I couldn't remember keeping scorecards with back-to-back complete games by the opposing pitcher. And so I went through my scorecards and couldn't find any. And so I started going through box scores on the site. And the last time that the Hoosiers were complete gamed in back-to-back outings was in 2012, so this is before the College World Series appearance, facing Tulane on February 26th and East Tennessee State on March 2nd. And I will note that neither of the pitchers were particularly strong. I think they each pitched for 1 rookie season in the minors. Might have been fluky, but Some of the names on that Hoosier offense will stand out to longtime Hoosier fans. You had a guy like Will Nolden leading off and was followed up by Dustin DeMuth, Sam Travis, and Kyle Schwarber. Like those are some pretty impressive bats going on there. And so that just very much caught my attention after that game because it's so rare to see it and you hate to see it at this point in the season, especially coming off of hitting Povich actually pretty well. And so that stuck out to me. The other thing that stuck out, and this was a good one, and goes back to my Hoosier highlights of the throwing strikes, throwing strikes, throwing strikes, was John Madunio ended his outing with 15 straight strikes spanning just over 2 innings of work. And again, I could not remember the last time I saw all strikes for consecutive innings. I've seen all strikes before, and I know I've seen Paulie Milto start off a game with a whole bunch of straight strikes. I remember tweeting with back and forth with Roger Rodehaver about that one. And so I look back through scorecards, going back as far as I've got consistent pitch by pitch data, which goes back to 2017. And there were no such instances of consecutive all strike innings. The closest, there were two pitchers who had two all strikes innings pitched, but were separated by other innings. Most recent is actually this season, Tommy Summer versus Minnesota in game two of the season, the first game against Minnesota. Before that, it was Pauly Milto versus Boston College in 2018. He had had an all strikes inning and then a pair of normal innings and then another all strikes inning. That again is just such a rare thing to see. You do get the occasional single all strikes inning. It happens, and I get excited every time. But to see 15 straight strikes going that long, it's pretty nuts. And on the day, on the game, he in the four innings, he only needed 37 pitches, and actually 29 of those were strikes. He threw fewer than 10 balls over the course of a four-inning outing, and the result is giving up exactly one hit and no runs. So really love to see pounding that strike zone, because when your defense is there behind you, it works. And he did have some good defense behind him, but that's still huge to see and very efficient. I like efficiency. So that's what I've got this week. Carl, kind of most importantly, how's the postseason resume looking at this point?
Yes. So I'm taking a really, really good look at both the resume and looking at the picture nationally, because now that Nebraska has clinched, the automatic bid is out of the picture for the Hoosiers. But now the fight for an at-large bid is there. And I did do a write-up for the site that covers the various scenarios. You know, there is the worst case scenario where the conference is going to be like, yeah, if you don't have at least a 60 RPI, we don't care that it's your fault that you didn't play non-conference. So tough. Well, then all of this is academic and it doesn't matter. Indiana's not going. But if you follow all of the major national media in college baseball, that is not the case. And pretty much all of them have the Hoosiers in. And I am particularly following D1 baseballs, mostly because they provide a lot of good details. Well, and I also subscribe to them. So I feel like it's that I got to take advantage of the subscription and the information it provides while I've got it. So if you look at the bubble picture, D1 has Indiana essentially the 61st of the 64 teams. And I basically kind of laid all that out. I took the teams that were declared by D1's Mark Etheridge as bubble teams, but not in either the last ins or outs. And basically I assigned them either a rank above or a rank below what they had assigned for that. And I'm basically tracking each of the games that the teams are playing, mostly in conference tournaments, especially up to this point, all in conference tournaments, and assigning values to various games and trying to kind of figure out how is this ladder moving as the week progresses. And right now I actually have Indiana just above the last five in. So actually the sixth, I have five teams getting in that are ranked right now below Indiana, and those are Pittsburgh, North Carolina, LSU, California, and Louisville. I have as all in. The first five out right now are Alabama, which is trending up, especially they just beat Tennessee today. That was a big one. But then Baylor, Oklahoma, Long Beach State, and Tulane follow them. A couple of teams have clearly now pretty much eliminated themselves. And I'm referring there to Clemson, Virginia Tech, and Kentucky Kentucky was one of the teams of the SEC that has had a single game play in. And even though they were playing a ranked team, they pretty much had to win to move their season along. So from that perspective, it looks pretty good. The thing that's a little scary though, is that the size of the bubble matters, and the size of the bubble can be shortened if a team that should win their conference and win their conference tournament and get their at-large bid is easily good enough for an at-large bid, and they lose that automatic bid to a team that would not get an automatic bid. And there was some bad news on that front. Yesterday, East Carolina got run-ruled by Memphis in the opening round of the American tournament. And that is very painful because the American tournament is an 8-team double elimination tournament. So losing in the first round means that now they are going to have to win 5 straight games in order to get that automatic bid and prevent any other team would steal a bid and shrink that bubble. So I kind of think that is probably likely. Now, the good news was East Carolina did beat Cincinnati today in the second round, but that's just one of the 5 games that they need to win now. Now the good news is obviously East Carolina is better than all the rest of the teams, but once they, there's only so much, even teams, really good pitching teams and good bullpen teams like Indiana, sometimes there's only so far you can go before that pitching just isn't going to hold up. The more interesting one was the Metro Atlantic, which you would never hear anybody talking about, except for the fact that heading in today, the number 2 RPI team in the country, Fairfield, had only lost 1 game. They lose in the opening round of the Metro Atlantic tournament. So they lost to Canisius, who Indiana fans will remember from a couple years ago. They played 4 games at the BART. They lost to Canisius 4-1 today. It should have been 4-2, but at one point Fairfield hit a home run and the guy forgot to step on home plate. I think that should just disqualify them from an at-large bid, but that's not my place to make a determination. But they went the first 2 months of the season without losing a game. They've lost 1 game in the regular season and now 1 in the tournament. Now, the good news is this one's only a 4-team tournament, so it's the loser's bracket is not nearly as punishing. And Fairfield is clearly better than the rest of that field. So, and they're playing on their home field. They are playing at Fairfield. So hopefully I'm more confident that Fairfield will turn that around and only have 2 losses and will get the automatic bid and will not get a stolen bid from that. Most of these other tournaments, the Atlantic 10, which is VCU, Atlantic Sun, Liberty, Big South, Campbell and USC Upstate, the Colonial, Northeastern, the Horizon League, which is Wright State, and the Mount, they all start tomorrow, Thursday, which will be after you've probably heard this podcast. And then the Mountain West is like the Big Ten. But they are only, their leader is Nevada, who should get in with an at-large, but they have a 1-game lead over San Diego State. And those 2 teams have a doubleheader on Friday as for their final series. So that's that will be an interesting one to pay attention to. Bubble teams will want Nevada to win that series. Indiana is going to be playing against Maryland. And Maryland is also in the calculation on this bubble team. Maryland already has a quality series win, having beat Michigan last weekend. Josh is going to have some more information on Maryland here in a minute. So Indiana will be playing Maryland. And in my opinion, based on everything I'm read, I think Indiana fans can be relatively comfortable if Indiana pulls off a series win in College Park, that Indiana will hear its name. I do not find it to be an impossibility that winning 1 of the 3 may be enough to get Indiana in. I also do not rule out the possibility that, like I said earlier, they'll say RPI, sorry, Big Ten, tough, Nebraska's the only one. But given how soft the bubble appears to be, and given the fact that there are regional analysis and everything else, I think we're looking at least three Big Ten teams making it in. So that's my opinion on it right now. The best, but for the most part, this is in Indiana's hands. The Hoosiers go win two games this week, and that is, really what's going to allow it to happen and what's going to make it happen. All right. Well, the Hoosiers do travel to College Park on Friday, and Josh is going to have our preview.
Yeah, thanks, Carl. Yeah, the Hoosiers are making that 10.5 or 11-hour bus ride to College Park, Maryland, to take on the white-hot Maryland Terrapins. The Terps are tied with Michigan for second in the Big Ten, one game up on the Hoosiers. After a rough 6-9 start to the season, they've since gone 20-9 to bring their record to 26-15 and have won 13 of their last 15 contests. They're 14-3 on the season at home and coming off a series win on the road in Ann Arbor. Maryland has a high-powered offense. They're led by their leadoff hitter, switch-hitting senior Bubba Allen. He has a slash line of 305, 410, and 581 with 26 extra base hits and is 22 for 25 on steals this season. So it's going to be very important for the Hoosiers to keep him off the base paths if they want to be successful this weekend. Big Ten Freshman of the Week, Matt Shaw, hits in the two-hole and plays second base. Shaw is batting 346 with an OBP of 412 and a slugging 532 with 14 doubles and 5 home runs. The big bopper in the lineup is junior shortstop Benjamin Cowles. He leads the conference in home runs with 17 and is second with 46 runs driven in. Cowles has managed to hit a home run in every single season series. So the Hoosiers, we'll see if the Hoosier staff can keep him under wraps this weekend. As a team, Maryland hits 263 with an on-base percentage of 384 and a slugging 449. On the pitching side, the Terps are very right-handed heavy, as all three starters and their closer throws from the right side. Friday starter Nick Dean is a sophomore, and in his last start, he went 6 1/3, giving up 3 runs last weekend against Michigan. It was his 6th consecutive quality start of the season. As a whole, he's 3-1 in 74 innings with 39 strikeouts, and opponents are batting 233 against him. His ERA is under 3 at 2.87. Saturday's starter should be Jason Savakul. Savakul has been named Big Ten Freshman of the Week 3 times this season. He did struggle a bit last weekend, giving up 6 runs in his 2 2/3 innings of work. On the year, he's 7-2 with a 5.32 ERA. So it looks like he's the starter that's been getting most of the run support for Maryland. He struck out 44 and batters hit 274 against him. Sean Burke should get the ball for Game 3 on Sunday. Burke is a big 6'6 sophomore who also had a quality start last weekend, giving up just 3 earned runs in his 6 1/3. On the season, he's 4-3 with a 3.42 ERA, but he has a big arm. He struck out 122 this season, and hitters are only hitting .188 against him. The closer is Sam Bellow. He has 7 saves to go along with his 3.26 ERA. Opponents are batting just .233 against him in his 19 1/3 inning. As a team, their ERA is 4.71 with a whip of 1.39, and opponents hit .247. So it's obviously a tough matchup for the Hoosiers, who definitely have their backs against the wall and are desperate for a series victory. But like we've mentioned before, you can't complain if you control your own destiny. And obviously we believe that they still do. You just got to go out and play the way they know they're capable of. Unlike last weekend, where the games were all nationally televised, with 1 on ESPN and 3 on Big Ten Network, we're back to BTN Plus for all 3 contests this week. Friday is scheduled for 6:30, Saturday for 2, and the regular season finale is set for a noon first pitch. So that will do it for this weekend's preview for the final weekend of the regular season. So Chris, now I'll pass it over to you to hand out this week's red belts.
Thanks, Josh. We got 3 first-time winners, as far as I can tell. All right. for offensive for the Alex Dickerson Award. You spoke about him before, and I think it is really fitting that the last weekend he plays at Barkhoffer Field, he takes home a red belt, and that's Jeremy Houston. Let's see, he went 3-for-5 one game, 2-for-4 another, 1-for-3 for another. 2 RBIs, that's 6 hits, 2 walks. Great to see Jeremy back out there. If there's one thing he has shown us, is that he has been able to take care of business after sitting down for a little bit, okay? He's not the pouting guy. He's not the one that writes the season off. The guy's a pro. He's a stand-up guy. We've been lucky to be able to watch him play for as long as we have. It's been a pleasure. Jeremy really earned this one because there really was not much offense after Friday, but Jeremy definitely took care of what he had to do. He takes home the offensive red belt. Now, for the pitching red belt for the Joey Donato, this one was like, it was up, it was very close. It was hard to decide between one and the other, but I'm going with John Madugno. Call me an East Coast guy if you want. I'm going with the Jersey kid. He threw us an inning, shutout inning with 2 Ks on Saturday, comes back Monday, starts the game off with 4 innings, 1 hit, 3 Ks. Another tight game. It's not like he went out there and we scored 4 runs in the first 2 innings and he could just do his thing. You know, it was just another nail biter with the offense stuck in neutral. So his performance was big for us. Carl mentioned it before. It's the 4th game, you know, of the weekend. You don't know what you're going to get. And we were solid. John's really performed well this year. I don't know if he really knew what his role was. I saw the post game. Somebody was asking him, you know, you didn't know you were going to start. Maybe you would have been the midweek guy if it wasn't for, you know, a pandemic and this and that. And he's really handled it well. I really think he has. Straight up, he's a freshman, right? I mean, he barely pitched last year. You know, he really stepped up. He pitched really well. Cass spoke about the 15 strikes in a row. Who knows if he even knew, but he pounded the zone. He took care of business. You know, he's a valuable weapon out of this pen in an original if we were to make one. So I really think John pitched well. Defensively, now this guy was right up there for the pitching red belt, but he's going to take the defensive red belt to Tony Butler, Grant Maciocchi. Now, I've heard of shortstops that have become pitchers. I definitely know of one of them. He pitches for a team from Queens, New York. I believe his name is Jacob DeGrom. He was a shortstop in college, became a pitcher later. Maciocchi's both now. And he acted like a cat off that mound several times. The way he keeping the runners close, the pickoff throws. You know, having a shortstop on the mound is definitely not a bad thing with a lot of comebackers. And PFP is important, all right? And we've known that. And Grant shows that he takes it seriously, whether it's you know, in the 6th hole or right there on the hill. So our 3 winners are Grant Maciocchi for the pitching red belt. Not for the pitching red belt, for the defensive red belt. John Madugno for the pitching and Jeremy Houston for his last home stand. He gets the Alex Dickerson Award. Now we're going to go to our roundtable, and it's going to be a little bit different today. We're going to kick it around to each of us, and everybody's going to make a case for this Indiana Hoosier team, this 2021 team. We're going to be talking to the committee. We're going to make a case for this team to be included in the big dance. And Josh's name got pulled out of the hat first to make that case to the committee. What do you got, Josh?
All right. Thanks, Chris. I would start by saying that I hope the committee doesn't hammer the Big Ten teams for their RPIs, like Carl mentioned, because the schedule is completely out of the team's hands. They know what squads usually schedule the cupcakes and which teams go out and challenge themselves and get battle tested in a normal non-con situation. But as far as my pitch to them, I would say exactly that. Pitching, pitching, pitching. Statistically, this is easily a top 10 pitching staff nationally. As a group, they rank 11th in strikeouts per 9 at close to 11 a game. They're 8th in the country in whip, all the way up to 5th in ERA at 3.13. Now, that's the entire staff combined. I think that any individual would be pretty pleased with that number, let alone as part of the whole group. And perhaps the most impressive is the fact that they're number 2 in the country in hits allowed per 9, only trailing the rocker and lighter lead Vandy squad at around 6.5 per game. They say it all the time, good pitching is key in the postseason.
What do you think, Carl? Where's your pitch?
Well, my pitch, and just kind of extend a little what Josh said. This may be the best bullpen in the country, mm-hmm. Period.
Yep.
The fact that you go through the pitching statistics and you don't have a hole. You don't have the guy with an 8 ERA. You don't have the guy that is, it doesn't matter. For, like we talked, for a game week, three bullpen guys, a bagel. Amazing mm-hmm. what this team can do. And they've done it against really good teams. So, yes, there have been some concerns, ebb and flow with the offense, but the pitching has been fantastic. Only one time in this entire season has the team given up double-digit runs. Yep. Thrown multiple shutouts, held teams multiple times to fewer than three runs. And they've proven that they can hit good pitching. The Iowa series was a demonstration of that, that they have the capability to produce the offense when things are clicking. Obviously, that was not this past week, but at other times it has been, and they have been able to do it. And the other piece about the RPI in particular is I kind of came up with this analogy lately because you think about several individual sports, Olympic type sports, where, you know, it's okay, you're before you, especially if you're being judged, you'll go through and you'll choose a difficulty level before you go perform that. And then when you go perform that, there's a floor. There's only so far you can be, and there's only so far up you can be. You can have the greatest performance, but if you've chosen a low difficulty level, you're not going to get a good score. RPI is more along those types of lines. It's what did I set up for myself? And then within that, did I manage to achieve it? But in a year where, you know, the league decides that the league's only going to play within itself, it wasn't, to Josh's point, it wasn't the team's decision. So from that perspective, RPI is really very meaningless because the team had made no decisions on who they played. They couldn't play anyone out of the conference. And within the conference, even then, you know, I mean, and actually, Indiana's RPI was hurt a little bit because within the conference, because five games against Minnesota, you have a league that for the most part is all good teams. Every team in the Big Ten is good except for one. And Indiana played that team five times. So that one, based on their win-loss record, was particularly punishing. Indiana's RPI should improve with a road series at Maryland, but clearly not enough for a normal year to be considered acceptable. And if this was just RPI and if there was no automatic bid in play, based on RPI, Nebraska would be fighting for its life right now. and Fairfield, at least as of this morning, was number two in the country in the Metro Atlantic. So, yeah, RPI should not be considered. And then you look at, in many cases, this is an extension of the 2019 season. You have a lot of crossover in players from the 2020 season to the 2021 season because of you have a lot of the same players coming back. I know there are some new players, but for the most part, you have a lot of the same players on teams. And the Big Ten proved in that non-conference period that it was a legit top-flight conference. And I think that should be extended to this 2021 season, that the Big Ten conference is for real and the play against Big Ten teams should count. Cass, what do you got?
Well, I'm going off of course, the pitching is the big part of this. The pitching. But related to that, this team has not really been blown out. There have been times where it's felt like it, where it's like, ooh, three runs. Is that going to happen on the offense? But in reality, they've very rarely been in what would be considered a blowout. Because of this pitching staff, this team is in pretty much every game all of the time. It's competitive, game in, game out, whether we like it or not. And so that really does help, being able to show like, oh, hey, our offense only put up two runs, but that's no problem. We'll just shut them out. We'll only let them get two hits. Like that level of pitching dominance, I think, is the big selling point. You're not going to see this team get blown out. it's going to be a close game. They can beat anybody because of this pitching. It's all the matter of, does the offense step up when it needs to? It doesn't necessarily, we've seen games where it's not necessarily the hits, the number of hits. It's the timely hits, the walks, all of that. The other part is the defense, and which has been, at times, has been fantastic. I'm fine with about an error a game as long as it's not a big one. It's avoiding those 4 or 5 error games that's the big part, but really the pitch is the pitching. That's what the committee needs to see. Can even go with the number of scouts when McCade is on the mound. Let's go with that measure instead of RPI. So, Chris, what about you? What do you think?
For me, there was a lot of mistakes made this season. All right. I mean, we were in an unknown time and in a season that no one knew what to do, a pandemic year. Did I agree with us not playing a non-con? No. Not enough people could tell me that there was the right thing to do. Did I approve? Did I think all this stuff was going on and that the schedules put together would really be just the conference? And then it came to play. I mean, we saw them doing it in football. You know, decisions were made by people who shouldn't have been making them, in my opinion. And did it hurt us in this situation? It sure did. Because I know Coach Mercer was going to have a stock non-con. He gets invited to these events. He was going to go travel on the road. So I know, I mean, I don't know how we would have played, but I know the schedule would have been there. And I know the RPI would have been there. So if they want to punish us for what the conference guys, these absent-minded people who made these ignorant decisions, whether it was any time during this pandemic, if they want to punish us for that, I don't know how we get around it. I really don't. Because they can play the RPI game if they want. Okay? I mean, a lot of mistakes were made. I still weren't a fan in the park the entire season. There was a lot of mistakes made. I don't think the committee should make a mistake of keeping this team with this talent out of the tournament. Has the offense disappointed down the stretch? Absolutely. All right? You go 2-6. You got a bunch of one-run games and all you score one run, two runs. Sure, it's disappointing. But as we're beating to death here, the arms are there. And I would rather see – I want to see who they're going to choose to put in instead of us. And an opportunity for this offense to make a case for themselves in Maryland this weekend is there. Hey, if we don't – honestly, if we don't win the series, okay, if the offense doesn't step up and come out of this, I get it. I honestly do. I know the part of me that says that one win is enough. If we don't win the series, I kind of get it. Well, what I want to see the committee do is, first of all, don't benefit these ignorant decisions by the Big Ten Conference. And treat this schedule as a body of work and not treat it in the order that it came in. We see it happen all the time in basketball. We see a team coming down the stretch slow, but they consider the entire body of work. And if you look at the entire body of work, when this thing is done, I don't see how you can't take 3, even 4 teams out of a Power 5 conference. You know, you want the Big Ten as to be what it is. If we win this series, I have a hard time seeing us not it.
Thank you, Chris. Well, that will do it for this edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. Read up on Indiana Baseball at iubase.com. Follow us on Twitter at CUAtTheBart and at iubase17. On Instagram, iubase. And subscribe to the Talking Hoosier Baseball channel on YouTube, featuring these video podcasts, game clips. I actually tried to get a few more of those up this weekend. Game day media availabilities and more. For Chris Feeney, Josh Bennett, and Cassidy Palmer, I'm Carl James. Hopefully we have seen our last home game without fans. And we so much look forward to the time we can see all of you again at Barkoff.